Welcome back to Unleash the Goats, where we unleash ourselves upon the Star Wars franchise with reckless abandon, and nobody quite knows what we'll say next, least of all us. I'm Nat, she, her. Angela, do you want to say hi?
Yes, I do. Hello, I'm Angela / Faye, she, her. I am sick this week, so if I sound different, blame the diseases that I picked up at work.
You shouldn't have gone to work. That was your first mistake, I think.
You're so right. Why did I do that?
Yeah. Sugar, say hello.
Hi, I'm Sugar, she, her. I am not sick this week. We swapped places, me and Faye, apparently.
She sent it to me.
I did. I guess didn't mean it.
That means it's my turn next to be sick.
Oh, no!
We don't live in the same place, but somehow it's going to come around.
We're all in different time zones, but we're sending it to each other over this podcast, apparently.
Wow. Mm-hmm. This is a very powerful podcast. Today we are talking about Grey Jedi, which is going to be fun for me because I'm going to learn a lot. Spoiler alerts for Jedi Survivor. Fun fact, I don't know what that is.
The video game.
Okay, it's a video game. Excellent. Thank you. Also, Rebels and the Ahsoka Show. And we want to give credit to our best friend, this Tumblr user, whose name I don't know how to pronounce, so I'm going to spell it. It's the letter 3. And then P-I-O-X. And Sugar, tell me about why we're crediting this person.
This person appears to have come up with the dim Jedi joke that everyone seems to have really loved from our first episode about how because the Force is not black and white, it's dark and light, that gray is nonsensical, and so they should be, in fact, dim Jedi.
I love that.
Thank you, Tumblr user 3PIOX.
Thank you.
We appreciate you. Your service is not gone unnoticed.
Yeah.
Or unappreciated. We love you.
We love you so much for that one joke.
So today we're talking about what a Grey Jedi is, and in fandom, it's often used to define somebody who is using both the dark and the light sides of the Force to be a Grey Jedi, like the ultimate Jedi, essentially. And it's usually somebody who's like pushing back against like the really strict council and like the code that's never been updated in like 300 years, that kind of thing. And that's not really how it actually works in canon. That's just kind of the fanon version of it. It's like the fanon version of Snape, where they're like, oh, but he actually really loved Lily, when actually he just like sucked like a lot.
I love that you put this in terms that I can understand. Thank you.
We're really good at that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so in reality, when people talk about Grey Jedi, what does that really turn into?
So this is what they mean, obviously. Like, you know, They mean that this is what balance is, but Lucas's version of balance was a little different, because the dark side is pretty much just all selfishness. It's all bad. You know, there is no good version of being dark. So I've seen the version, a metaphor saying, like, you know, if your cup is full of half water and half poison, it is still, in fact, poison. Probably shouldn't drink it. It's still going to kill you. There's also the example of, you know, if half your cells are cancerous, you're still pretty dead. You know, it doesn't matter that the other cells are not cancerous. That's not really balanced.
Before somebody comes into our comments, it's like, oh, but like, you could build up an immunity if you take a little bit of poison every day. Actually, that's good for you. No, don't do that. First of all, that'll kill you. More likely, you will end up with lead poisoning. That's going to progressively get worse and worse and worse, and you will die. Like, that's not... I'm so sorry that Princess Bride lied to you, but that's not how poison works.
This is why we invited a scientist as one of our mods.
Yes.
It's okay. Nat and I can talk about other things. But yeah, so like you end up with this, like, someone who could probably get away with a little murder if they dare donate to charity sometimes. It's fine. You know, this is what, you know, Jeff Bezos. Like, nobody likes him still because he's still a piece of shit. Doesn't matter how much money he donates to charity, it's still like the bittiest bit of his amount of money because he's a terrible, awful person. So you really, there's no way to balance these. That's not how it works. It's also not necessarily good versus evil. The themes that they're going for in Star Wars are like selfishness versus selflessness. And so balance is more about acknowledging darkness is in everybody and, you know, in the universe. But you just are refusing to allow it to control your actions. I will admit here that that kind of is usually where Grey Jedi stuff tends to lead. It just gets, like, people pretend that using dark and light is the same as doing this, whereas it seems to more accurately within Lucas's Star Wars be about, like, yes, I could do bad things. I'm just choosing not to. It's not about using both dark and light, you know, dark, like, acknowledging that you have darkness is not the same as using it. Oh, right. I have a George Lucas quote. I forgot about that. I know.
A quote. I love quotes.
I love quotes. So I can't remember where this is from. Probably some interview that he gave. But he said that the only way to overcome the dark side is through discipline. The dark side is pleasure, biological and temporary and easy to achieve. The light side is joy, everlasting and difficult to achieve. It's a great challenge. You must overcome laziness, give up quick pleasures, and overcome fear, which leads to hate. So this is, you know, not like the clearest thing in the world, obviously, but you can kind of get the idea through this that the dark side is still pretty much just all bad things. You do have to just sort of reject it in order to live a good life, live a balanced life. And that refusing to acknowledge it is actually what leads to imbalance. And I think that that's what people believe, like the Grey Jedi fans seem to believe the Jedi are doing, is like just pretending they don't feel any fear at all. But that really isn't how the Jedi work.
No, not even a little bit. I saw a definition once that it was like swimming on the surface of the water, and then the light side is like staying on top of the water, and the dark side is being sucked down into it. Being sucked down into the water is a bad thing. And like, yes, you might survive if you're really powerful, or you might survive for a little while, but like the dark side literally kills people. Like, it's not good for them. They don't look healthy. They like get really emancipated and creepy. It's awful.
They don't look healthy.
Yeah, I mean, even if they don't, like, obviously Palpatine tends to look fairly healthy right up until he gets sizzled by his own lightning. Like, it's consuming him.
I bet that man's skincare was insane. Well, no, that's not fair. He's 50. He's like 55 in Revenge of the Sith. Yeah. He does not look healthy for a 55-year-old.
He doesn't look that bad.
I mean, there's a significant difference between the before and after of the sizzling.
This is true. Yeah, it's a big contrast. But like, 55-year-old people don't generally look like they are super old.
I mean, that was...
They usually look like normal.
Ian McDiarmid's face.
Like, yeah, but he wasn't 55 when he was shooting the movie. He was like 60 or 70?
It would have been closer to 60, but because he's 79 now, and let's see, 1999 was how many years ago? Like 25 now?
Oh, Jesus.
He was like 90 in my head.
No, he's 80. I mean, just to make life a little easier, he's 80. So, obviously, and the 1999 was when the first prequel movie came out, so that's, whatever that is. Is that 20?
I love that we insist on the tangents.
Yeah, 25 years. We do, all right?
Sorry. No, I love it. I love it. I'm so sorry.
So, yeah, no, that is, in fact, Palpatine and Ian McDiarmid's, you know, actual face.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry, McDermott. Please know that I do love you, even if I haven't forgiven you for not doing your panel the one time I was going to get to see you, but I do love you anyways.
I see. Okay. So you have a personal vendetta against this man, and he actually hasn't done anything wrong.
Listen, he did do something wrong. I had really good seats to go see a panel at Comic-Con. I had excellent seats. I waited 2 hours through really boring panels to move up that far.
Oh my goodness.
And then they canceled his panel, and I was depressed, and I'm still sad about it.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, it's depressing. Thank you for understanding my pain.
We can get back to how the Jedi work.
Sugar, would you like to tell me how the Jedi actually work?
I'd love to. So as we sort of touched on earlier, the Jedi obviously are not actually repressing or rejecting any of their emotions. It's just an acknowledgement. They call it mindfulness. Mindfulness is like an actual thing that exists in Buddhism. It's an actual practice. You can go Google it yourself, but the idea, again, is to sort of acknowledge your own feelings in order to keep from acting on them in a way that is harmful to yourself and to others. So, you know, in the case of the Jedi, like, if they are getting angry at a situation, they have to recognize that they are feeling upset about something unjust that is happening and sort of evaluate what is the appropriate way to respond here. Sometimes it is, in fact, violence. Obviously, this is a thing that the Jedi are willing to do. They do have weapons.
they carry lightsabers specifically. Lightsabers are super dangerous. I don't know if you guys noticed that, like, they cut people's arms off.
They do. But they tend to utilize them only when necessary, as much as possible. So it's not like their first instinct is to violence, unlike certain other characters we could name. But we'll move on from that. And it is acknowledged within Star Wars that this is a constant choice you have to make. You don't, like, acknowledge your feelings once and now you're done. You know, that you do have to keep, you know, every moment, every day, you do have to kind of be aware of how you're feeling so that it doesn't catch you by surprise. And this is something that the Jedi are constantly doing. This is why they seem pretty chill all the time, because they've spent a lifetime building up this skill of mindfulness. And so it's not that they are just rejecting their own feelings, they're just, like, good enough at this mindfulness thing to be able to react appropriately, even in difficult situations.
This is also a real technique taught by therapists, that if you're having issues controlling your emotions or controlling your reactions, it is really good to just identify what you're feeling. Even just sitting there and identifying what you're feeling can really help you process through things. And that is just what the Jedi are doing. They aren't just letting their emotions go and being like a pool of water that has nothing and feels nothing. They're just recognizing what they're feeling, processing it, moving on.
Yeah, there's a difference between, like, rejecting your feelings and just accepting them and knowing that, like, feelings do not last forever and they can be valid and also wrong, and you don't have to act on every single feeling that you have.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I think it's like they're processing it very quickly, right? That they can sometimes end up in a moment and very quickly kind of process their emotions, so it can appear as if they're being very unaffected on the outside. But it's just really that they're very, very practiced at this skill of sort of sitting there and acknowledging their own emotions. So they can do it in a very quick way. But I appreciate that you brought up that it is also, it's not just in Buddhism. It's a thing that is in, like, regular Western psychology as well. So it's not like it's just, you know, a thing that that other religion does, you know, that I'm not familiar with. Like, no, actually, like, Western culture does teach it too. It's just that a lot of people don't go to therapy.
Oh, but they should.
They should. So this is where we are going to hit on attachments.
Ah, attachments.
Attachments.
The bane of my existence. Oh my god.
The bane of every Jedi fan's existence. Every pro-Jedi fan's existence. Attachments. So we touched on this, I think, was it literally the last episode in the Ahsoka show? We might have done that. Done it there.
Probably. We talked about a lot in that episode.
We're going to bring up attachment a lot because I personally believe that it is kind of the core thesis of the entire Skywalker saga as Lucas wrote it. So it's important. It comes up a lot. Basically, the idea is that attachments are toxic connections to the world around you. This can be to a person, a place, an object, even just an ideology or a dream. And it, you know, can start off as a more genuine, selfless love, but has an attachment is what it is when it becomes selfish, and the person with the attachment has an inability to let go of it. The most obvious example of this in Star Wars is Anakin to Padme, and this inability to let go causes him to side with the Sith in order to gain access to what he believes is going to be an ability to keep Padme from dying, because it's not really about Padme anymore or what she might want, so much as it is just about not wanting to live without her because he's too scared to live without her. And this is why Yoda makes his whole quote that everybody talks about fear leading to the dark side, is that Anakin ultimately is scared to be alone, and so he, you know, commits genocides and enslaves galaxies in order to not be alone. So they're not a good thing.
Which is very ironic considering, you know, that he ends up being the most alone person in the entire galaxy. He has no friends. Nobody.
It does not work out very well for him.
Unless he considers Palpatine a friend.
I'm not sure he considers Palpatine a friend, at least
I wouldn't
after Revenge of the Sith.
Personally.
He does, obviously, before Revenge of the Sith. I think afterwards that is probably not so true, but...
Also, can you imagine your social life if your only friend was Palpatine?
Really bad.
That's disgusting.
It is exactly what he deserves, though. But that's okay. Attachment is something that is obviously a lot more prevalent, again, in Buddhism. It, much like mindfulness, does also exist within Western psychology practices. It's called non-attachment, you know, as this, like, really healthy way to have relationships. And just, it's not, like, about not making a commitment to anybody or to anything you care about or not caring about anything at all, so much as it's just accepting that things in life don't always last forever. And, you know, you might end up having to let go of something for any number of reasons. You know, someone might die. You know, they might just, the relationship might run its course and you might have to let go for both of your sakes. Your house might burn down. You know, you might just move. You might need to move for some reason. And so, you know, being unwilling to accept change in life is an unhealthy way to live. We wanted to mention here that attachments are not the same as commitments. And so the Jedi forbidding marriage is not because of attachment necessarily, so much as it is about commitment and this idea that, like, the Jedi are doing something that is very dangerous, that requires a lot of them. And so in order to sort of fully commit themselves to the responsibility of being a Jedi, they can't really give themselves to other things that are also asking for an equal commitment, like a spouse or a child, where, like, if you're half-assing your relationship to your wife, you know, or your child, it usually is not a good thing. Like, you're probably going to be considered fairly neglectful. Obviously, in real life, you do have people who try to do this, you know, people in the army, obviously, who do have spouses and children that get left at home. But it is also something that's very, very difficult to balance. A lot of, you know, this is where the Dear John came from, right? That people who go to war, like, that relationship maybe doesn't survive long distance.
What I wanted to touch on a little bit is that when the Jedi are forbidding marriages, right? When they're like, okay, marriage is not allowed. Like, we're not going to, like, have that. If you want to be a Jedi, be a Jedi. You're not going to do both, right? They're not doing that because they are being selfish and they're demanding all the Jedi's time for themselves. That is not the point of this rule. The point of the rule is that, because if they want it to be selfish, hold on. The point of the rule is that it is a big commitment to make, like Sugar was saying. And if they were being selfish about this, if this was a selfish rule that they were making, the whole Jedi as a whole, then they wouldn't forbid marriage. It is good for them to have more Force-sensitive people in the world, galaxy, to train and make into more Jedi. And Force-sensitivity is often passed on through by children, right? Children often inherit parents' Force-sensitivity. It's not guaranteed, but it's very often, right? So if they were being a selfish Jedi order, they would just encourage marriage, and they're not, because that's not what they want. They want people to have the best lives, and they want their people, their Jedi, to help the most people possible, which they can't do if they're also worried about their wife and their children.
Yeah, we don't want to half-ass any of these things. All of these are very important commitments to make, and it is better to be fully committed to one of them. It also is a choice that they are all making, right? Like, the people who decide to be Jedi are aware that they are making the choice also to then forego marriage and children. And, you know, they also are fully capable of leaving. They can leave and have the marriage and child thing if they want to do it. It just means that they aren't going to be Jedi anymore. And you know what? Sacrifices happen sometimes. Like, sometimes you can't have your cake and eat it too. The other thing I'll point out real quick here while we're talking about marriage is this idea that, like, you cannot be happy without marriage and a kid is very,
wrong.
Wrong.
Incorrect.
And, like, a metanormative.
Yes.
And we will get to that later in a different episode where we talk more about aromanticism and asexuality. But we're just going to toss that down here, that idea that the Jedi, like, could never be complete or happy as people who have to give up things like marriage and children is kind of ridiculous and, you know, should not be, like, something that they're condemned for, or something that they are, like, that they should have been doing, you know, that they should have been forced to do in order to save themselves.
Yeah, those things are fulfilling, but they're also a personal choice. Lots of people are happy without spouses and children. It's fine.
Exactly. Before we move on to the specific characters, we sort of skipped over this real fast because we needed to discuss how the Force works and how the Jedi work, and we're nearing the end of our time here. Faye, do you want to give your definition of what a Grey Jedi actually is, given all of these things?
Oh, thank you so much for reminding me. I completely forgot. I only wrote that like 20 minutes ago. So my personal definition of what a Grey Jedi is when someone goes, oh, that character is my favorite character. What if they were exactly like this hot antihero with gray morality that I read about in this romance book who just like committed lots of murder, but then he told his girlfriend that he loved her. And so therefore he's a good person. That is my definition of a Grey Jedi most of the time. Not all of the time. I will say some people do put a lot of thought and like work into creating their Jedi, Grey Jedi worlds, parallels, whatever, what have you. But quite a bit of what I've seen is just, but what if he burned down the world for everybody except for me?
Wow. Which is hilarious, given that so the romantic. Entire point of Anakin's story is to go like, yeah, you know that whole burn down the world for you thing? It's not as romantic as it sounds. And that is kind of the whole point of his story, especially within the prequels. My definition, kind of trying to utilize like what a Grey Jedi might actually look like within in-universe using the actual world building, was a character who is still a Jedi within the Jedi Order, but is regularly acting selfishly and occasionally gives in to the dark side, but hasn't technically gone full Sith, and still claims to be acting on the name of the greater good, and occasionally does still do good things. In other words, Anakin Skywalker. Within, generally, Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. So, your best example of a Grey Jedi, it is Anakin Skywalker in the prequels.
Yeah, it's basically just like a pre-evil dude.
Yeah, famously a Sith Lord.
Famously a Sith Lord later. That's why I specified within the last two episodes of the prequels.
Yeah.
And in, within Clone Wars and stuff like that, where he's not technically Sith yet. He does do some good things. He's kind of generally heroic still on the side of, you know, on the right side, but like, he also regularly acts pretty selfishly and does give in to his darker side and will, like, you know, maim and kill people as he feels he wants to.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite things about Vader in the original movies is that they call him Lord Vader. Like, he gave that title to himself. You know he did. He was like, but what if everybody called me Lord Vader? That sounds so much better than Darth Vader. That's cliche. But Lord Vader. Wow.
He's and then, so dramatic.
Of course, in fairness, in the prequels, I think, doesn't Palpatine call him Lord Vader in Revenge of the Sith?
He says Darth, I think.
No, he says Darth Vader.
I feel like he goes back and forth. I know he does say Darth, but I feel like he does say Lord at one point, but I could be wrong.
That wouldn't surprise me. He's like, I need to boost this man's ego.
Yeah.
So that he thinks that this is working for him.
It's just not high enough.
It's not. It's so not.
Editor Angela here. After some research, yes indeed, Palpatine does call Anakin Lord Vader in Revenge of the Sith. However, this happens after a scene cut, so I maintain that Anakin was like, but what if you also called me Lord Vader? I don't want to be just Darth Vader. I want to be special. I also want to be called Lord Vader. Personal headcanon. Don't take it serious. It's just for laughs.
Okay, now that we have established that Grey Jedi are just not a thing. That's what happened right there, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
As we said, here's some people in fandom that think that this is a canonical thing, and it's not. Should we talk about some people in canon that people like to think are Grey Jedi?
We should.
Yes, we should. Sugar, would you like to start with Qui-Gon? Because I would specifically like to talk about Luke so much, so would you want to talk about Qui-Gon?
I would love to talk about Qui-Gon. He is my baby. and he is Nat's baby, too. So if Nat wants to jump in, you are so welcome. So Qui-Gon is one of the most common Grey Jedi, possibly the most. He's up against Ahsoka, who we'll get to later, for most popular Grey Jedi in fandom. But basically the only reason he lands in this category seems to be because Obi-Wan has this line about how he defies the council more than once. This is a pattern that he has. However, I will point out that there is an entire episode in Clone Wars where Ahsoka is called upon to teach some students in Mandalore about how to question authority. Where could she possibly have learned about questioning authority other than from the Jedi? Which means questioning authority is something that the Jedi encourage in their own teachings, you know, and that would include themselves. You know, so they, you know, questioning the council isn't something that they would actually discourage. So Qui-Gon theoretically should not be special for questioning the Jedi. The Jedi would just kind of do this normally. We do see also in Clone Wars that there's a couple of moments where the Jedi council sort of question each other. Most obviously during the Yoda Force Ghost arc, you know, they kind of bring up the, you know, Yoda might be compromised. And they can't just automatically trust him because he's Yoda. Qui-Gon, in actuality, is a very proud Jedi who happens to have a lot of faith in the Force's will, and that's why he tends to push his own agenda against the Council, who has to take into account a lot of other things, like the general well-being of the Jedi Order and their political connections to the Republic at large. No, babe. Anakin teaches her to defy the council and just do whatever the fuck she wants. It's not about questioning authority for the good of everybody. That's not what... And also, in Clone Wars, he literally does not know anything about politics. He's not teaching her shit all about politics.
He's super not.
For context, we have a Google Doc we're looking at, and I just edited it to say, other than Anakin, in Sugar's notes about where she learned to question authority. Shit, I dropped my content.
Anyway, that is Qui-Gon. Qui-Gon is not a gray Jedi as much as people want him to be. He's a normal Jedi. He's a good Jedi.
He's a great Jedi. I love him.
And as people have pointed out, like, if he didn't really trust the council or trust the Jedi or even like the Jedi all that much, why the fuck is he trying so hard to bring in Anakin and make him a Jedi? Like, why wouldn't he just leave and go train Anakin by himself?
He could have just picked Anakin up by the scruff of his neck and then wandered off, and no one ever would have found him again, and everyone would have been fine. Like, he has options here.
Yeah, like, if he genuinely just did not care for the council and disagreed with them that much, like, why wouldn't he have just gone and done whatever he wanted rather than, like, trying so hard to get the council to let him be a Jedi? Like, it doesn't make any sense. And this is where we're going to move on to Luke, and Faye is going to desperately struggle through this illness to talk about her fave.
I'm doing great. Thank you so much. Luke is my baby boy. I love him so dearly. The interesting thing about Luke is that while he does face his own darkness and, like, struggle with it, actually very similarly to how Obi-Wan faces his own darkness in The Phantom Menace when he's fighting Darth Maul. Fascinating parallel. But while he's doing that, he is never at the point where, like, oh, I have to choose to, like, follow this way or follow that way, or, like, you know, it's not like he has a ton of options here, right? Like, we're not seeing him deliberating on, like, oh, well, I can just be my own version of the Jedi. Like, no, he is learning by who the Jedi are. He has an idea, and he learns more and more about them. He makes the specific choice himself to commit to that, right? And I've seen people say that, like, he was proven right when he left Dagobah to go after Han and Leia. But if you watch the movie, I don't know if you guys have heard of this thing where you watch the movie where you're pulling stuff from.
We're not bitter.
Luke contributes nothing. He contributes nothing. Leia gets her own ass out of there. Her and Lando and Chewie get themselves out of the fire. Luke showing up helps nobody. The only thing it does is maybe distract Vader, but, like, if Luke hadn't shown up, Vader just would have been hanging out in that little chamber, just patiently waiting for hours.
He's so patient. It's not like he's torturing people to get Luke there or anything.
Yeah, but, like,
impatiently waiting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Han gets frozen into carbonite. They send Leia stuff back, and then her and Lando, like, ditch. Like, they already have a plan going. Luke barely helps. All he does is maybe provide a distraction. But not even that much, because he's only dealing with Vader. Vader's like, all right, everybody else, go away. I need to deal with this dude all by myself. The only thing that Luke leaving Dagobah accomplishes is him learning about the truth about his father probably way too early in a very traumatic experience, and he loses a hand and his lightsaber. Well, those are, like, really defining characteristics for him, and they shape his character in a lot of ways going forward. I don't know that Luke would say that that comes to a total success in the column. Like, if he was going to make, like, a list of pros and cons from that experience, I feel like it would be more cons than pros, just personally speaking. If I lost a hand, I would definitely put that in a con column.
I'll point out, Mark Hamill agrees with you.
Exactly! And so, I don't know. The, like, idea that because he, like, defies Yoda and goes off and does this thing, and, like, that is a sign that he is a gray Jedi or whatever, and that it succeeds for him, and that was the right choice. That's not right. Like, it loses him so much time with Yoda, first of all, and we only get to see him one more time for, like, a couple of hours before Yoda passes away, and there's so much that he doesn't know. Like, it's a really big theme in the Legends that, like, Luke doesn't know anything about how to run a Jedi Order. He's trying so hard, and he has no knowledge to pull from, because he has no one to teach him anything. He was with Yoda for, like, 3 months. He knows the basics of, like, how to be a Jedi. He knows really good at sword fighting, because that's what he needed to know, but... And then when we get to Return of the Jedi, A Return of the Jedi is fascinating because, first of all, Luke shows up in all black. Never happened before in the movies, right? The first movie he's in white, the second movie he's in gray / green. But the last movie, he is in black. And for the marketing and everything, it was a little vague on whether or not he was actually going to choose to be light or dark, right? But there was no option for the middle ground because he's not a gray Jedi. He's someone making a choice between the darkness in himself and lightness in himself. He's not making a choice to go the middle ground. He's making a choice to be light or dark. And then when the movie starts, right, like we get Luke being really scary. He's got his whole cloak up. He's being super weird. He kills people like immediately with a force choke, which we've only seen Vader do before. So he must have picked it up from him because nobody else we see does that. And the movie goes and goes and goes. And like there's tension building of like, is he going to choose the dark? Is he going to actually fall when he's confronted with Palpatine and the temptation of like being second in command to the Emperor of the Galaxy? And then as he fights Vader and as he comes to the conclusion that no, he is going to be a Jedi. He is going to choose the light like his father should have. And then at that point, the costume department is so fucking good. The flap on his shirt falls down and it's white on the other side. And it's such a good choice. And it's so profound. And I could kiss whoever does the costume for the movie on the mouth. And I will if I ever meet them. And it's just a beautiful movie because he is choosing the light and he is trying to help Anakin see that the conflict in him is leading him towards choosing the light, just because Luke is trying to choose the light and he's being tempted over and over and over, just like Anakin is tempted over and over and over every single day. But Luke is making the decision to choose the light every single day, and he continues to do that even when he's faced with this worst temptation ever. He is faced with basically a very similar choice to Anakin, but he chooses the opposite and he chooses the light side. And he's not a gray Jedi at the end of this movie. And he never is a gray Jedi. The only reason that Luke gets married in the Legends is because it wasn't canon that Jedi can't get married when that book came out. I'm so sorry to tell you this. And if he had known that Jedi couldn't get married, he wouldn't have gotten married. And as much as I love Mara, they just would have been besties for life. That would have been it.
Yeah, Lucas agrees with you. Obviously, Lucas liked Mara as a character and detested that she ended up Luke's wife. So he was not very appreciative of her inclusion in Legends, even though he didn't have an issue with her as a character on her own.
They are super, super, super adorable, though. I can't blame Timothy Zahn for being like, well, what if they got married? Because like, they're so cute. They're so adorable. Oh my goodness. The little, she calls him Farm Boy. Like, oh, I'm obsessed with them. Anyways.
I will say that the costume designer's name is Aggie Gerard Rogers.
Aggie Gerard Rogers, iconic of you. Bless you and your beautiful soul. You deserve every award in the world.
I don't know how much time we have left on the Luke section, but I think the one thing I wanted to hit on for Luke here is that a lot of the reason he ends up getting labeled Grey Jedi is because of the whole conversation with Obi-Wan when he goes back and confronts him about the whole, like, why didn't you tell me that my father was Vader thing? And Obi-Wan has this quote about how, you know, your feelings do you credit, but you have to bury them, or they could be used against you. And that Luke, and he's obviously trying to convince Luke to accept that he needs to, that he might need to kill Vader, that Vader will not necessarily offer him the opportunity to save him, you know, that Vader may not be capable of being saved, and that Luke does need to accept this. Even if he wants to hope for a better option, he does need to accept that there is the just as much probability of the other direction happening.
And then two, that is this very specific situational advice. Obi-Wan is not telling him to bury your feelings all the time. He's saying, hey, Palpatine, super master manipulator, master manipulator. He can turn you like that. He has turned better people than you. I mean, that's a phrase, right? There is nobody better than Luke. Yeah. But my point is that, like, he is trying Reva. To warn Luke that, exactly, he is trying to warn Luke that this is a real danger that you're in, that you have very sensitive feelings and you're very good, and he is evil and he will use that against you. And he is not telling him to bury your feelings all the time. He's just warning him about Palpatine's ability to manipulate.
Exactly. There is that. And it's not just Palpatine. It is Vader, too. It is Anakin who is also capable of doing this, and it's actually Anakin who does it pretty immediately within that last fight scene where he uses Leia against Luke, and it works.
Oh, yeah. When he's trying to get Luke to break so that he'll kill him and take his place so he'll live. Devastating, first of all.
One interpretation of what's happening, but yes. But regardless, it is Anakin who is also perfectly capable of doing this. And so the warning is for both Palpatine and Vader that if you're going to go up against either of them, yes, you have to be aware that your feelings can be used against you, that they are, you know, level 500 psychic space wizards, and Luke is only at level 100 right now.
I mean, level 150 at least. Give him all a right. little credit.
All right, 150.
He can be 150. But in the end, he definitely, he goes and he's like, I'm a Jedi, because he's chosen the light side, and that's the whole point of the Jedi, as I've right. just learned.
Yes.
I'm a good student.
Right, you are. You are our best student. The reason this gets used to claim Luke as a great Jedi is that he claims himself a Jedi by explicitly not killing Vader like Obi-Wan says he might have to. And so people, much like Faye mentioned for the Empire Strikes Back example, it's like, oh, he went against what he was told to do, which means he's, you know, not obeying their advice. And so when he claims himself a Jedi and wins based on doing the opposite of what he's advised to do, this means he's explicitly rejecting Jedi teachings as per Obi-Wan and Yoda, when that's not really true.
Honestly, I could talk about why Obi-Wan's advice would have been a very good advice for anybody but Luke, and why it only worked for Luke because of the way that their relationship works, but we don't have time.
We don't have time for that.
We're supposed to record for like an hour at most, so we're going to move on.
We're going to move on.
That'll be a different episode. Don't worry.
So Obi-Wan is relatively uncommon as a fandom great Jedi, like we kind of mentioned earlier, sometimes fans want to like a particular fan favorite, but don't care for the Jedi or the prequels Jedi in particular. And so they kind of gray Jedi-ify them in order to sort of, you know, find a way to like them. And Obi-Wan is a very beloved character. So I've seen him sort of get gray Jedi-fied in order to make him a more palatable character who, you know, is like critical of the Jedi Order and, you know, coming up with this whole idea of balance being, you know, both dark and light, blah, blah, blah. So he's not super common, but he does kind of land there. Obviously, this is more of an intentional change to his character rather than a misunderstood interpretation mm-hmm. of the character. So that's a slightly different example. And with that, we are going to move on to Disney canon and Filoni canon.
Filoni is your favorite, Sugar.
Oh, yeah. We love him.
Yeah, I definitely didn't call for him to be fired just last episode.
I do really like his hat, actually. That is, like, one of the positive things I have to say about him, is he does have a cool hat.
His little cowboy hat that he definitely did not.
His cowboy hat.
You don't dislike it because it's definitely something that he gave to Cad Bane explicitly, because Cad Bane is another self-insert character who gets, like, super overpowered.
The only good thing about Cad Bane is his aesthetic.
That's so funny. All right.
That's it. That's the only good thing.
Let's talk about Ahsoka again.
Let's talk about Ahsoka. We haven't talked about her enough. So she is our next most common gray Jedi. I haven't exactly done any polls about whether she or Qui-Gon, you know, would be considered the most common gray Jedi, but she's up there with him.
Which is very funny, because she is not a Jedi. She specifically says, I'm not a Jedi, like six times, like six different times she says, I'm not a Jedi. And Filoni's like, but what if you were, though? And like keeps writing her saying that and then coming back and being like, but she actually is a Jedi. Just kidding. It so annoys me. Like, let her be consistent. Like, I know she's going through stuff, but like either make an explicit arc that you're actually writing for her character to grow, or don't do it at all.
Yeah, that's something that I kind of, which this is where we're going to touch on the Ahsoka show a little bit, is that Ahsoka, Filoni, is not letting Ahsoka commit to being a Jedi, not a Jedi, or a gray Jedi. I was kind of arguing before this show, before the Ahsoka show, that they weren't really going for the gray Jedi thing with her so much as they were just kind of continuing to take her on this journey of coming back to being a Jedi. And that Ahsoka, you know, just had a lot to work through in terms of, you know, how she was going to identify as a Jedi. As someone pretty much the only person, I think, that I know of who had left the Order prior to Order 66 happening. Most other characters that we see going through a similar arc are characters who were still Jedi when Order 66 happens, like Obi-Wan, Kanan, Reva, even. Ahsoka, though, has that kind of unique caveat that she had left the Jedi prior to Order 66, and so she's kind of in this weird position where, like, she can't really go back to being a Jedi the same way, so she's sort of stuck in limbo. However, after the Ahsoka show, Filoni's not committing to it, but I think he's landing her in as close to a gray Jedi as he can get without calling it such.
Sadly.
Yeah, which is very disappointing, because I think one of the things we didn't really mention as much towards the beginning is that one of the things that gray Jedi get used for the most, and, you know, not all the time, not all gray Jedi fans, but, like, a lot of them, is to bash the Jedi. They tend to land in, like, a Jedi critical area where, you know, the gray Jedi are doing things the way the Jedi should have.
They're, like, helping the Jedi realize that they need to change and they need to update things, and they, like, mm-hmm. need to move into the modern era. And it's like, this is a different world. This is a completely different galaxy. You cannot put our modern morals on these people who have an entirely different societal structure than we do. The Jedi religion doesn't even function the same way our religions do. There is no modern equivalent in our world to the Jedi at all. You can barely compare it to anything. You can maybe compare it to the Peace Corps, sort of, but not really. It doesn't really work the same way at all.
Yeah. So it's hard to make that comparison. They also serve a narrative purpose. Like, the reason that they don't really work in terms of making a comparison to real life organizations or religions is because that they kind of fulfill this narrative purpose of being, what did I call it in that first episode, the barometer for the galaxy's health or something. And, you know, so they are there as this, like, almost perfect, benevolent, compassionate organization. And there's been a lot of characters kind of introduced over the years now of Jedi who've sort of, you know, fallen and left those ideals behind. So it's not just Anakin anymore. We have characters like Barriss and Krell.
Oh, I hate Krell.
We all hate Krell. But Anakin, you know, within the prequels exists as sort of like this anomaly, you know, that everybody else is like this perfect version of goodness, that they are all the best versions of themselves. And that's what the Jedi stand for. And that's what they symbolize. And so, yeah, there's no actual, you know, realistic version of this that exists in the real world, because they are supposed to be an ideal to sort of reach for and not an accurate depiction of how reality works.
We don't have lightsabers in this world either. Like, this is not a realistic world. This is a mythology story set in space. So it's not supposed to be one-to-one to Earth. This is supposed to be essentially an Aesop fable told out on a grand stage.
They explicitly start it with a galaxy far, far away. Like, that's... Yeah. You literally don't have to know anything about Star Wars except for that to understand that.
This is not Star Trek, where they're like, this is where humanity is going to end up in, like, a couple hundred years. This is Star Wars, where it's in a different galaxy, and they have different things happening.
Yeah, I mean, it is pretty explicitly, like, a space fantasy, more than it is sci-fi.
Yeah.
You know, it is an opera. It happens to be a fantasy opera set in space, you know.
Space opera!
It is space opera, it is space fantasy, it is not science fiction. Obviously, things like fantasy and sci-fi, but fantasy in particular, you know, are utilized to send messages and be metaphorical allegories for our real world, but this does not mean that the Jedi are supposed to be, like, space Christianity, you know, kind of thing.
Oh, they're super not.
not even a little bit. They don't even believe in God. They just believe in, like, a force.
They believe in the Force. I know that some people kind of view the Force as a more semi-sentient kind of thing, but that's your personal interpretation kind of deal.
Yeah, and also, like, they explicitly believe in something that they can do. Like, it's not like a belief thing. Someone is like, this is literally just how the world works. It's like gravity. You don't just believe in gravity. It just works for you.
Right. To be fair, the Force's will thing is a little bit less clear. In terms of, like, it's like as compared to the telekinesis. So they know the Force exists, but the Force's will is something that is a little bit more going on faith, which is why Qui-Gon can go like, I think the Force's will is this, and the Council can be like, we disagree.
Yeah. Yeah, that part is a little more nebulous.
That part's more nebulous, but, you know, there is obviously a lot of themes on faith and things like that that aren't applicable to this particular episode that we can get into at some later point. But there is some faith that is there, but they do know it exists. At the very least, they are aware that it exists, and it is a provable, measurable thing, as per the prequels. You can measure midichlorians. Hey, the Ahsoka show, you can measure midichlorians.
Speaking of gods, we also wanted to mention the Mortis gods, just briefly, because they're going to come up in, like, main canon again for some reason. The Mortis gods have so many different definitions, like, that you can interpret them, like, a million different ways. They're, like, a metaphor, they're a story, they're a dream, like, oh, who knows if it's, like, a real thing that they're all experiencing, or they all just got knocked out for, like, 4 hours. Like, you know, there's a lot of ways to interpret the whole Mortis arc.
Can it's I interrupt ambiguous. You? Please do.
Yes, of course.
Is this the episode that we all watch together?
Yes, it is!
Where, like, there's the girl and the son, and they're fighting?
Correct. Yes.
Ugh, and it's in Clone Wars. If anyone else doesn't know what's happening, don't worry, I'm with you.
Right, our apologies. I guess we should have explained. The Mortis gods are a group of characters from the Clone Wars who are introduced in Season 3. We're calling them gods here. I think the Mortis gods is something that has sort of been brought in, like, post-Rebels. They aren't referred to as gods at all within Clone Wars. They are kind of implied to be more, like, really old, really powerful Force users who have just been around for a really, really long time, and so they kind of have ended up encapsulating different aspects of the Force, sort of. And you have the daughter, who represents the light, the son, who seems to represent the dark, and then the father, who's kind of controlling them both. And I've seen people say that he's supposed to represent balance, but you could also see him in a few different ways. He is, like, the galaxy itself and the community that is supposed to be keeping the balance in check. And within this arc, you know, Obi-Wan, Anakin, and Ahsoka are sort of brought in and sort of end up caught up in this weird grudge match between the son and the daughter. And
you know how siblings fight, you know?
Yeah.
Classic.
And the son ultimately ends up killing the daughter. Spoiler alert for Clone Wars, our bad.
He also kills Ahsoka. Let's not forget, Ahsoka fucking dies this episode. Like, super, super, super dead.
Yeah, so Ahsoka is turned to the dark
first. I shouldn't laugh at that. I'm sorry, Ahsoka.
You know what? It's fair. She should have died here. She would have been better off. But so she's killed after being turned to the dark and forced to fight against Anakin and Obi-Wan. She is associated. What's interesting about this, and this is not super related, but she's much more associated with the dark and with the sun in this episode, while Obi-Wan is the one pretty firmly associated with the light and the daughter. But then after Ahsoka dies, within that same fight, the daughter is also killed by the sun, and in her final breaths, she sort of gives what's left of her life to Ahsoka. So she dies, Ahsoka lives. And so there's this whole thing going on with Ahsoka now where she is, like, the daughter reborn. She's some sort of goddess of light on Earth sort of thing. It's very annoying, and I don't care for it.
She has, like, a whole, like, a mythos thing with the bird that, like, follows her around. Yeah. If you watched Ahsoka and you notice that, but you haven't seen Clone Wars, yeah, the weird bird that follows her around is, like, part of the whole Mortis arc gods thing.
It actually isn't. The bird came in for the first time in the Ahsoka novel written by E.K. Johnston.
Are you saying that fanfiction has lied to me? Sugar. Would they do that?
Would they do that? Yeah, the bird actually does not exist in the arc within Clone Wars. She does not have a fucking bird, but it got brought into the Ahsoka novel and was then transferred into Rebels Season 2. The bird is everywhere, and every time Ahsoka shows up on Rebels. And so I guess apparently abandoned her at some point between...
Sure.
Rebels and the Ahsoka show, and has apparently showed back up in a whole different galaxy. Super fun.
Do you think the bird brought her outfit?
Oh! You know,
maybe.
Yeah, we figured it out. We solved it, guys. Congratulations to us.
Although, to be fair, she gets the outfit before she leaves our galaxy, and the bird doesn't show up until the end.
Well, the bird could have been hiding on our ship.
Exactly. Maybe. The bird has just been toiling away for the last 20 years, making her clothes.
Right. So you can obviously view this as, like, light and dark with balance in the middle, and you can only be balanced if there is equal amounts of both light and dark, and that if you have too much light, that it is equally as bad as having too much dark. However, you can also see this in a way that is a little bit more accurate to Lucas's own world building, where the daughter herself is never actually shown to be, like, equally dangerous. She's always working to help others, and she's always avoiding violence unless, like, pushed into it. And again, like, it's not good versus evil, it is selflessness versus selfishness. So yes, she can be violent when she has to be to protect others. It's not like she is so dangerous on her own, it's that she is willing to do what is necessary to protect others, whereas the son is selfish, and so even though that is his nature, you know, he is still making choices he can change.
He clearly does have affection for his sister. He does care about her. He is sad when she dies.
And but his
like,
father.
That doesn't, and his father, like, he loves them both, but that doesn't stop him from making the selfish choice because he wants power. But he could have made a different choice. That is very clear that he could have chosen differently and he decided to be selfish anyways. He is right. Not being held captive here or, like, going against Starlight, like, being controlled or anything like that. He is choosing to do this.
Yeah, to be fair, he is being held captive there because, like, that's the whole kind of point of the arc is that they're trying to keep him from escaping. He is kind of being held captive. But that's not what I meant.
But yeah, you're right.
But so is the daughter. But and so the father, you know, can't stop the son from being selfish. That is just who he is. But he can stop the son from hurting others when it becomes necessary. Like, and he does. But I feel like the moral of this is, like, you're not supposed to view them as three separate things, but as, like, that whole idea we were talking about earlier about how there is darkness and light in all of us, and we all have the capacity for selfishness and selflessness, but that it is what you choose to act on that matters, and the father is choosing to try to not kill his son because he loves him too much, and it ultimately ends in his daughter dying. And until he is willing to accept that he has to put an end to the son's selfishness, is he, you know, capable of bringing balance back. But it's too late, he has to sacrifice himself to do that, and the daughter is dead, and he can't undo that. Shocker, this is supposed to be a really big Anakin episode, and there's a lot of references to the things Anakin does later, and his whole arc.
And a Shmi cameo. Don't forget the Shmi cameo. Very important, everybody. The Shmi cameo is essential.
In fairness, it is technically the son pretending to be Shmi.
That's not the important part. The important part is the actress came back to voice the part, and she's there for like 10 seconds.
Yeah, the actress.
Vital.
The actress who played Shmi in The Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones came back to do the voice for her. She's one of very few actors from the films who actually came back to voice their own characters. Liam Neeson as Qui-Gon is one of the few others.
She's delightful. If you guys ever want to watch anything else that she's in, I recommend Young Royals. She's the queen mother in that show. Excellent. She speaks in Swedish the entire time because it's a Swedish show. Oh, she's so hot. She does very questionable things in that show, but she's really beautiful.
Does that make her a gray Jedi?
Hopefully not.
No.
Questionable actions, but very beautiful.
To be fair, the gray Jedi do not have to be attractive.
They're often not. Like, have you guys seen Siths? Anakin does not get hotter when he goes to the dark side. I don't know if you guys noticed, but he takes his helmet off in Return of the Jedi. Not good looking. Not good looking. As much as I love him.
To be fair, Dooku continues to look great.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Ventress looks great.
Okay, so this is just clearly, there's not a rule across the board. It's just some of these people look great, and others of them
just
are Palpatine as the Emperor.
Or Anakin.
Or Anakin after he's been in a trash can for a while. Really, which apparently was a reference to his armor, which I didn't catch when we recorded that episode. And I think it's funnier to put him in a physical trash can. Anyway.
It is. We are going to make him, what is it, Grover the Grouch. He's a total Grover the Grouch. So we're going to move on to some Rebels stuff, because Kanan and Ezra get tossed into this as well. This is going to be very similar to Luke in some ways, where you know, they say and do a couple of things because they are, you know, coming in after the Jedi are already dead. And people are like, oh, well, it's obviously them kind of intentionally breaking with Jedi rules when that's really not how it works. And they both have arcs across the show where they occasionally are struggling with things like guilt, grief, insecurity, but they are never using those things to triumph or succeed. They have to learn to overcome them. That's kind of the whole point, you know?
You think these people are, like, actually well-rounded characters that have flaws? Wild.
Wild. it's almost like characters need to have flaws to overcome in order to have a story.
Oh my god. Interesting.
Oh so my interesting. God. Have you crazy.
Writing? Do you know if Filoni has heard of this?
Filoni has not. Filoni has and has decided it's stupid. Filoni needs to go to a, like, retreat where he figures out how to write. The other thing that gets brought up a lot, in particular for Kanan, is that he happens to end up in a relationship with Hera. And unlike what I believe Filoni tried to say, they did not end up in a relationship only in season 4. That is stupid. Just because we never saw them kiss in the prior seasons does not mean it wasn't exponentially clear to every other person watching this that they were in a relationship. They were fucking on the side. That's how this works.
Also, they don't have to be fucking to be in a relationship. They probably did because they do have a child.
Yeah, I was like, they absolutely did. They fucked at least once, Nat.
Just once.
Just the once that it ended up in a kid.
Yeah, that's how the world works, right?
You know, sometimes it do, though.
Sometimes it do.
Mm-hmm. Spot the aces on the show.
Yeah, they are clearly in a relationship the whole time. They call each other love, and they like make jokes about how they're mom and dad and stuff like that. They're pretty physically affectionate with each other, and they're very, very close emotionally. But also, like, Rebels, unlike some of the other things I've seen where Jedi characters have ended up in relationships, doesn't really ever try to state that, like, Kanan being in a relationship with Hera is against Jedi rules, is something that he can only do because the Jedi are gone. Like, he just happens to be in a relationship with Hera, you know, and is a Jedi at the same time. They never get married, but also, like, this is a place where you could kind of argue, like, the Jedi are gone, and so a lot of the commitment stuff that is a problem before is no longer there. It just isn't, is the word I'm looking for. It's not valid. Applicable.
It's also, like, not necessary. People have make this mistake with the Jedi all the time. The Jedi are not celibate, per se. Like, they fuck around. Like, they get that. It's like a biological need, whatever. But, like, the fact is that, like, Hera and Kanan are both fully committed to the rebellion by the time that they're in, like, a relationship, right? Like, they are committed to this, like, life. They are committed to this mission team thing, right?
Kanan is committed to the team and to kicking it to the Empire and helping others. He's not committed to the Rebel Alliance as a thing, the way Hera is, but arguably it's the same, to the cause.
Yeah, but, like, they have the same attitude about this. Neither of them are both like, oh, well, you have to give up your stuff to be with me. Or, no, you have to give up your stuff to be with me. They're both like, no, the rebellion comes first, and we love each other, but the rebellion comes first. Not the rebellion, sorry. Kicking it to the Empire comes first.
For Hera, it's absolutely the rebellion. Like, Hera, and that's one of the things that was very, very wrong about her in the Ahsoka show, is that, like, Hera was the character who prioritized the rebellion pretty much above all else. You know, and I mean, obviously she isn't in a position where it's an issue, because most of them are kind of on the same trajectory here, but, you know, when it does come up, she is willing to make that sacrifice. But yeah, so I think it's just kind of a wrong interpretation of Kanan to look at the fact that he happens to end up in this relationship with Hera and mean that he is rejecting Jedi teachings, and so obviously he's a gray Jedi. Kanan and Ezra are obviously less common than characters like Qui-Gon and Ahsoka and even Luke, generally, in this category, but they do come up every so often.
It's especially very common in Ezra / Luke fiction. Ugh. I've only read a little bit of that, but it does come up quite a bit. Have you never heard of this, Natalie?
I just found out that Ezra was a character, so no.
You know, that's fair.
Yeah. Ezra and Luke are, like, about the same age.
They're exactly the same age.
But yeah, Ezra is baby.
No, they are the same age, babe.
Oh, they are exactly the same age because Ezra...
Born on the same day.
Yeah, I think it's...
Oh!
Yeah, basically the same day. Because they mention in Rebels that Ezra's birthday is Empire Day, which is supposed to be sort of the anniversary of the Empire coming into power. You could argue that Luke might be a day younger, depending on how you think the timeline works for Revenge of the Sith and how long it takes before Luke is actually born.
But definitely same week.
within a day of each other.
So pre Din Djarin and like Luke meeting and like the whole Mando/Luke thing, that was one of the most popular male on male ships for Luke was Luke and Ezra. They were very popular. Luke and Ezra and Luke and Bodhi. Those are two very common pairings for him.
Bodhi was a big one when Rogue One came out. But which isn't shocking given that both Ezra and Luke are on this list for gray Jedi characters who stick it to the Jedi or whatever. But real quick, we wanted to hit on Sabine just because Sabine kind of unfortunately has landed in this Jedi category and Force user category as per the Ahsoka show.
If you listen to our Ahsoka show episode, you'll know how we feel about Sabine being a Jedi.
The tone to my voice right now definitely doesn't say anything either.
No, you're being really subtle about your feelings, actually.
Thanks. But basically, because Ahsoka lands in the, you know, Jedi critical and kind of almost gray Jedi kind of area within the Ahsoka show, obviously Sabine kind of lands in the same place. But it is the same sort of non-committal gray Jedi area where she is being Jedi critical. They are making the claim that she's doesn't have to be a Jedi specifically, but also kind of is, and they're not saying the words gray Jedi, but that's clearly kind of where they're landing. So Sabine is kind of on this list now, but she is a very, very recent addition to this list. And next up is going to be the Bendu, who, for those of you who have not seen Rebels...
Which is both me and Natalie. I'm so sorry, Sugar.
I know. We'll get there. You know what? Nat might be getting there very soon. So, spoiler alert for the end of season 3 for Nat and anyone else listening who hasn't seen it, but...
Notice that she didn't put a spoiler warning in for me. So mean.
You gotta get through Clone Wars, babe, and then Sugar will tell you to watch other things.
Well, also, Faye knows a lot of things already, so I figure this probably isn't going to be a particularly large spoiler for Faye. But the Bendu happens to be a sentient being that is found on a random planet, who is apparently super, super old. He is a Force user. He's not human. He's something else, unclear. He claims to be neither light nor dark, but in the middle. And this is a quote he says a lot. He is in the middle. For Faye's sake, he is voiced by the dude that was the fourth Doctor, I think. The one with the scarf.
Tom Baker? Yep. Tom Baker voices fucking Bendu?
Tom Baker is the Bendu, yep. So you're going to be real happy when you get to him. So the thing about the Bendu...
I think I should watch Rebels.
You think? You've got 2 seasons of Clone Wars to finish first, and then you get to the Bendu.
A season and a half, actually.
Season and a half? Oh, no, you're right. You got into 6. I forgot you got into 6.
I got into 6.
Yeah, so season and a half or so. So the thing with the Bendu is that he is obviously supposed to be very wise. He helps Kanan face a lot of his own fears. He is compassionate. He sort of leads Kanan to be more understanding and more compassionate towards beings he doesn't understand. He doesn't know. But he also, at the end of the season, is completely apathetic to the lives of the rebels when the Empire comes and discovers their base and is prepared to obviously obliterate them all. Kanan goes to ask for help. The Bendu says no. He's not going to help the Empire, but he's not going to help the rebels either. The reason this don't fucking work, as a number of very wise people have said when I did my research on this, Desmond Tutu and Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. among them, is that basically if you stay neutral when oppression is happening, you've picked a side, and that side is the side of the oppressor. So the Bendu choosing to be in the middle when the rebels are about to be all murdered off by Thrawn is not, in fact, a neutral thing to do. You know, by not fighting back against the Empire, he is fighting against the rebels. He's hurting them by doing so. So this idea that you can be in the middle and still be good, that this never has any impact, is untrue on the side of the Bendu. What's unclear about the Bendu is whether the storyline itself is choosing to support him or not. Kanan obviously is very upset by this, So he's not necessarily being condoned by them, but I see him get brought up a lot as this idea of being in the middle. I personally don't think he works as being on the side of like, yeah, you can totally be a Grey Jedi and the Bendu is an example of one kind of thing, because he nearly lets a bunch of people die, and that's the Bendu.
There's actually an episode in The Clone Wars, in like the first season, I think, where they discuss the moral position of neutrality in the middle of war. I think it's with the Toydarians.
Yeah, that I think is actually season 3.
Is it really? It seemed earlier than that. But like, they discuss that like being neutral in the face of cruelty and awful things that you can help is not neutral. That is still making a choice, and you're choosing the incorrect choice. Just because it's a different choice doesn't make it the right choice.
Yeah, it's definitely the Toydarians. It is season 3. You see the Toydarians in season 1. It's actually the very first episode of The Clone Wars, where like it's Yoda and some clones trying to get to the Toydarians so that they can sign up to join the war, basically. You know, join the side of the Republic.
Oh, you know why I watched that first? Because I was watching in chronological order when
that's
I started
right.
Clone Wars.
That's right, you were. But it came out in so later in season 3 during that period where they were just doing a bunch of sequels and prequels to earlier episodes.
Yeah, so I watched the prequel thing before I watched season 1. That's why I remember watching it earlier. Okay,
right.
Okay, we caught up.
We solved
but
it.
Yeah. So that is there, and it is absolutely true. That is a thing. And the other thing I've seen about that episode is that like this is basically why the Jedi fight the war. That for all the people claiming that the Jedi should never have fought the war, blah, 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 this is why they do it. You know, that like, yeah, they could have just chosen not to fight, but like, who all would have died as a result? You know, how is that better? So
there.
There are some groups within Legends that I have also seen utilized to try and argue that Grey Jedi should have been a thing, like the Jedi characters, Corellian Jedi, Altissian Jedi, most of whom seem to be kind of going towards this idea of, like, marriage should be allowed, and we should be allowed all of the feelings and stuff.
I mean, they are interesting, and, like, I appreciate what the authors are trying to do with these different, like, groups of Jedi, but these are essentially, like, Force users who use the name Jedi, right? Like, most of them are splinter groups, so they moved on and stuff like that. Like, it saying that they are examples of how to be Jedi is not really how it works, because the Jedi are the most successful group out of all of these. All these are splinter groups that die off within a couple hundred years, for the most part.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, also, they are kind of all going their own way, and this doesn't make them accurate to the way the Jedi are actually portrayed in Lucas canon. So, it is what it is. They exist. I don't think that any of them are a good argument for, like, ah, oh, Grey Jedi are canon, or this is how the Jedi should be, kind of thing. And then, the other thing that I've seen utilized against, or for, the Grey Jedi argument is things like video games. The only video games I've actually been familiar with that I've actually played or watched are the Cal Kestis games, Jedi Fallen Order and Jedi Survivor. But I know that there are other games out there where you're kind of allowed to, like, learn dark side skills as a light side force user. And so people have kind of pointed out that you can do this, and so obviously you can use both dark and light, and it doesn't impact you. But, like, it's a video game. Gameplay mechanics are their own thing, and you have to, like, keep that in mind when you talk about video games, and that they're not necessarily going to be trying to adhere to world building super strictly when they are creating the mechanics of gameplay. So it's just kind of a little silly, but
I know that Disney put a bunch of weird lore for The Rise of Skywalker in a, what was it, FIFA or something? Like a live stream, but that doesn't necessarily make it world building that actually matters to the story. So your random secret lore from a video game, while interesting and cool, doesn't actually affect the rest of the world. I'm so sorry.
Editor Angela here to remind Podcast Angela that what she's referring to is the game Fortnite and the event Fortnite X Star Wars, in which Palpatine's broadcast to the entire galaxy that he is still alive, happened, was canonized, and you're welcome, everyone. You had to watch some random event on Fortnite to get all the information.
Right. And the other thing that comes up for me with video games is, like, there are obviously storylines in these video games, and it's important to look at, like, what's happening in the story versus what's happening in the gameplay, and do these things actually correlate or not. Particularly in Jedi Survivor, the main character, spoilers for Jedi Survivor, this is where this comes in, the character ends up getting given this big dark side power-up towards the end, because he's feeling really betrayed and angry, and he's just lost a bunch of people that he really cares about. The person who betrayed him is someone he was considering a close friend at the time. So he's upset, and he kind of explodes in darkness and utilizes that skill to, like, murder a bunch of Imperials. To be fair, he murders Imperials a lot, so this isn't, like, a huge thing, but, like, he murders them very quickly and very powerfully.
That's just me after I don't get breakfast, so I don't feel like it's really important to his journey as a Jedi.
It is, but because when he gets to the end, he sees his love interest, who kind of recognizes that he is losing it, and she has to kind of talk him down to try and, you know, keep him from kind of going gangbusters everywhere. He hasn't totally let go of it, but by the end of the game, he has to basically face the choice about whether to kill the traitor when he defeats him or not. And he ultimately has to actually let go of that anger and that grief that is driving him in order to leave him alive. And the character ends up dying at the end anyway, because he doesn't surrender. He can't let go of his own fears that are driving him to darkness. And Cal ends up having to kill him in self-defense. But he does do it in self-defense. It isn't out of anger or grief or betrayal or any of those things. So you do keep your power up. You use it a lot. You can keep it after the end of the game if you keep playing afterwards. But, like, the point is not that, you know, he gets to just use his dark side power up all the time now, so it's actually okay to, like, use both dark and light. It's just, this is how gameplay works. He got given a power-up ability, now he gets to keep it. But it doesn't mean that within the storyline it's not made very, very clear that him using the dark side is a bad thing. And that, I think, is just, like, a really obvious example of the difference between video game storylines and video game mechanics and gameplay. I will note that there is some Jedi criticism that exists in both games, but Cal also pretty strongly identifies as a Jedi. There's no wishy-washy lack of commitment to that identity. He is very much a Jedi. It just kind of lands in more like, I'm a Jedi, and I think that the Order was wrong about relationships, so I'm going to be in a relationship now kind of deal.
Which is mostly an excuse so the players get to, like, date somebody. Like,
yeah, not that you couldn't as a Jedi normally, as we've discussed, but, like, you know, they kind of make it out as if, like, the Jedi wouldn't allow you to be in a relationship normally. Anyway, that's video games. I think it's kind of silly to utilize video games to, you know, make the argument that gray Jedi are a canon thing that could work, because video games are a very different beast for the most part, but they do have storylines in them, and the writing sometimes tells a different one.
Pablo Hidalgo is a wonderful author. We talked about him a little bit in our first episode, but if you remember, we talked about the gray Jedi code that he came up with, tongue-in-cheek. Very funny. And I think we should all recite this together.
Together? You think we should recite it together? That sounds like an audio nightmare.
I'm the editor, so...
Okay.
I'm giving this nightmare to myself.
Fake is to use her option. She is to pick whoever sounds the best.
That's true! If that's I only use one of you, that's who my favorite is.
Damn.
I'm just kidding. I don't have
picks herself.
I think Faye should say it aloud.
Okay. The Great Jedi Code. Morality is fiction. There is only indifference. Through anger, I gain dark side powers. Through loopholes, I keep light side powers. Through edginess, my mediocrity is glossed over. The Force makes me so special. Beautiful.
I feel special. Well, thank you both for walking me through why gray Jedi are not a thing.
You're so welcome.
I loved it.
You're
welcome. Anytime. Would you guys like a goat fact to close us out?
Yes, please.
Sure.
Goats are burpers.
What?
They burp. That's due to the role of their rumen. The rumen is a mature goat, holds 4 to 5 gallons of plant material, and then it produces gas when it ferments, and the gas escapes in the form of loud, healthy burps.
Good for them.
Good for them. They're so cute.
Our intro and outro music is Mos Eisley Cantina by Speedkicks. Angela and I edit, our artwork is by me, and Sugar is our writer and researcher. You can find us on Instagram and Tumblr at Unleash the Goats. Thanks for listening.